All right, we're recording. Okay. Erev Tov, this week, Parashat Acharei Mot Kedoshim. All right, double Parashat this week. And what we're going to do is we're going to cover actually the back half of, back end of Acharei Mot. There's a ton of things to talk about in Parashat Kedoshim, the entire Parashat. Acharei Mot contains also a lot of exciting things. From the beginning, Yom Kippur, Avodah, but actually I'm going to talk about the end of Acharei Mot, which concentrates on Eretz Yisrael and what we have to do to make sure that we don't get kicked out of the land of Eretz Yisrael. That seems to be the focus of the end of the parasha. The Torah says, I have all the Hebrew over here, Al titamu b'kol eila ki b'kol eila nitzmuhu ha-goyim asher ani mishalech mipneichem. Torah says, Hashem says, after listing several Averot, but primarily listing the Averot of Giluy Arayot, of illicit relations between people, after saying all that, it says, don't do any of these things, because it was due to all of these Averot that the previous inhabitants of the land were all kicked out. That the land vomited out, it threw up all of the people that were there before because they got involved in all kinds of avirot, specifically these. Don't get involved in any of these things. They contaminated the land through these avirot. And don't contaminate the land the way these other nations did, because it vomited them out. Very repetitive over here. And then it continues and says that anybody who does any of these abominations, any of these abominable practices, will be cut off from the rest of their nation. Okay? Now, what I want to do with this is ask the following question. Is there anything special about the land of Eretz Israel? It seems to be that Hashem is saying that the land is going to vomit people out if they do these Averot. We're going to assume for now that we're talking about specifically the Averot of Gilei Arayot, although that's not necessarily clear. The Or HaChaim says that's not, that we don't know which Averot are being specified over here as being the ones that everybody gets kicked out. It's, presumably, the nations of the land had done many, many Averot. And it could be that it's these Averot that are going to get us kicked out, or it could be others. We'll assume for now that, to keep it simple, that it'll be the ones that are listed in the Torah right beforehand. Is it any land that will kick us out, or is it only Eretz Yisrael? And if it's only Eretz Yisrael, how does that work exactly? There's something special about the land of Israel. It seems to be like there is. Anybody have any thoughts about this idea? Seeing that we just celebrated Yom Ha'atzma'ut, Chag Ha'atzma'ut, celebrating the land that we're living in. Is this a dangerous place to live? Are we going to be kicked out? Are we going to be vomited out if we do things wrong?
I think it depends on what you do with the land. I believe that there must be something special about it. But if you eat pig on Yom Kippur, then and you're in Israel, not sure how holy that is.
And if you're in London,
sure whether, what?
And if you're in Golders Green, is there any difference? This is my question: is it any different to eat? Okay, Chazir on Yom Kippur in Golders Green or Brooklyn or Johannesburg or Uganda than it is to do so in Eretz Israel?
Not that I understand the sentence, but Israel has a certain segula to it. I don't know what that means, but Israel has a certain segula to it, which I think means that if you plug in, then plugging in Israel is superior to plugging in London.
Okay. So here's my question. Can you do any work on that? What is Eretz Israel's segula? What makes it so special? Is it Hashem the land itself? Did Hashem imbue the land with something special? Make
he's
it.
Told us, he's told else? Us that it is imbued with a segula, and if we believe him, that obviously we believe in that it is mesugal, and therefore it infuses us to do things in a better way in Israel and to come closer to him in Israel, whether or not the mitzvos We can feel that or can connect to that. I don't.
Okay, where in the Torah does it say that the land of Israel is special in some way?
Devarim.
What does it say?
Enei Hashem Elokecha ba mireshit shana v'achad acharit shana.
Okay, yafeh, perfect. So, Martin, tell me something. Based on that pasuk, does that mean that the land itself, I'm being careful, is the land itself any different than any other land? Based on that pasuk?
I think based on that pasuk it is.
Okay, in what
because
way?
It's an unconditional, so-called unconditional, in a sense, condition that Hashem is implying or imposing, so to speak, on the land, irrespective of whether we're in the land or whether in the land we're keeping mitzvot or doing the opposite.
Okay.
It seems to be an independent fact.
Okay.
There seems to be something special about Har HaBayit as well.
Let me ask it in this way. Simon, you're a Kohen, yes?
Yep, I think
okay.
So.
Does that make you more special or different than me? Inherently, is your genome any different? Is your do you have any different abilities or talents than I do,
or than Harry
does, or Martin, or David?
I think that it's the same. It's the same thing as I was saying before. I think there is the potential there. I don't know how to explain what that potential is, but I think that Hashem. I think Hashem has given the Kohanim or the Bechorot initially, and then the Kohanim the potential to reach a greatness.
Simon, you think that inherently in every Kohen, including yourself, you have the ability to reach heights in some way that I or Martin or I don't know or Moshe Feinstein or Rav Aaron Cutler, he wasn't a Kohen, I don't think, or. Yisrael Meir Lau, any of these people, you have something that they don't? Is that the case?
I think everybody has something that everybody else doesn't have.
Yeah.
I think that, okay, one second.
He can get out of the talit and give us the bracha.
Oh, so Harry, what gives him the ability to do that? That's my question. Is it because Simon and all the other Kohanim are different than us? Is that
they're inherently different. Yeah, they're inherently different. They happen to have a genomic difference. But that's incidental.
There's something different in our neshama of Danny. There's something in your neshama that has leadership and has other character traits, and you've decided to fulfill them. There are some people who have kindness in their neshamas. You know, we have like all the different seven types of character traits within your neshama, and maybe Kohanim have the Ahava. They also have Kas. You know, there's all sorts of character
okay.
traits. Do you connect to them? So, do you utilize them?
But Rav Dani?
Yes, go ahead.
This
Don.
Is Don. I mean, I think
Don. It's actually your. It's actually your the ceiling fixture. That's what that's what we're
just
seeing.
Oh yeah, whatever. Okay. the Kohanim have special sort of rights or responsibilities because Hashem said so.
Ah.
And likewise, the land Haaretz is special because Hashem said so.
So I'd
it's
like to take
like
what Don
what
said.
It's sort of like what you say to your kids sometimes when they ask the question why, and the answer is because I said so.
I don't want to call it cynicism, but I'll take the sharpness out of it a little bit, and I want to show you what the Ramban says. Okay, if there's somebody who thinks that there's something special about Eretz Yisrael, I think we can all agree it's going to be the Ramban. Correct. I think we can all agree that Ramban is going to say that there's something special about Eretz Yisrael. So let's take a look at what he says about these psukim and how he understands the segula, let's say, that Simon was describing before. So the Ramban says over here, "Hechmira katuv ba'arayot bavur ha'aretz shetitma behen v'taki ha'nevashot ha'osot." The Torah is very chamor, very severe about arayot in Eretz Yisrael because it's going to kick everybody out. Vine ha'arayot chovat haguf ve'inan tliyot ba'aretz. Now that says, I don't understand. What does Arayot have to do with Eretz Yisrael? Eretz Yisrael has certain mitzvot that are specific to it. Maser, Truma, etc., etc. Right? All the mitzvot are tluyot ba'aretz. But last I checked, Gilei Arayot applies the same in Eretz Yisrael as it does in Brooklyn. Aval soda davar bekatuv shamar b'hanchel elyon goyim b'hafrido bnei adam yatzav gvulot amim ki chelek Hashem amo. Oh, the fact is that Hashem set aside a portion. B'hanchel elyon. What word do we have here? B'hanchel. This is the word nachala. B'hanchel elyon goyim b'hafrido bnei adam. All right, he gave a portion to his people. V'hainyan, ki Hashem anachbar bara hakol. God created everything. V'sam koach ha-tachtonim b'alyonim, v'natan al-kol am ba'am b'artotam l'goyehem, kochav u'mazal yadua kasher noda ba'atztignat. Okay, so the Ramban is a mystical Rishon. And he says that Kadosh Baruch Hu created everything, and every land is given a sar. This is classic Ramban theology. Every land is given a spiritual avatar, a spiritual general that is in charge of that land. V'zeu sh'ne'amar sh'chilek Hashem elokecha otam chalak Hashem elokecha otam lekol ha'amim. Hashem gave out a portion to every single one. Ki chalak lekulam mazalot b'shamayim. He gave every single one a constellation, a mazal. U'gvoim aleihem malachei elyon natanam liyotam sarim aleihem. Ki inyan shekatuv v'sar malchut paras omed lenegdi. You find these as explicit psukim in Tanakh. Right, Daniel says that he saw the spirit of Malchut Paras standing in front of him. And he saw Sar Yavan, Ba. Okay, so each one, each land, each country, each nation gets its avatar that is in charge of it. Bine, Hashem anechbad, hu Elohei Elohim, Adonai Adonim l'cholam. But of course, God is on top of all of these. Aval Eretz Yisrael, emtza'ut ha'yishuv, hi nachlat Hashem, miyuchedet lishmo. And the fact is that the land of Eretz Yisrael is assigned only to him. Lo natan alea min ha-malachim, katzin, shoter, u-moshel, b'hanchilo ota, la'amo ha-miyached shmo, zera ohavav. He did not put any sar in charge of Eretz Yisrael. V'zeo sh'amar v'hitam li segula mikol ha-amim, ki li kol ha-aretz. This is the line in the Ramban. Here is the word segula. V'hitam li segula mikol ha-amim, ki li kol ha-aretz. This is going to be my land, because this land is mine. I can give it to whoever I want. And he gave many mitzvot, including arayot, to Bnei Israel. I separated you from all the other nations. This is what he means, hivdalti. Meaning, I have separated you from the other nations because all the other nations get their own sar. However, I gave you the land where there is no sar. There is no sar in Eretz Yisrael. And I put you there, which means this is my land, Hashem says. And because it's my land, I won't tolerate Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayot. Why does Gilui Arayot get you kicked out? Why does Avodah Zarah get you kicked out? Because Hashem's presence is more in focus in the land of Eretz Israel. Now I ask again, is there anything special about the land of Eretz Israel itself? I would argue that according to the Ramban, the answer is no. There's nothing special about the land. There's nothing infused in the land itself. The land has no sentience. It doesn't have any more of an aversion to Gilui Arayot or Avodah Zarah than Brooklyn or Golders Green or anywhere else. There's nothing special in the land. It's just that this is the space where God has chosen to emanate himself more than anywhere else in the world. Now, what does that mean? I don't know necessarily, but he's claimed this land. And when you're in this land, the rules are different because he's here. He says, I won't put up with anything. I'm the one who's going to kick you out. It's not the land. God is putting it on the land, but it's really God himself. Yes, go ahead, Simon.
How about the Evan Shtia in Har Moriah? You think there's nothing intrinsically holy about that?
Good. So I have an extra section at the bottom that's going to cover that. Thank you. But we're going to have to wait. V'hine, v'chutz la'aretz, afa b'shal sh'akol l'shem nechbar. Of course, in chutz la'aretz, God exists as well. Ain't tahara b'ashlema, but you don't require a perfect tahara there. Of course, you're going to have avodah zarah in chutz la'aretz. Of course, you're going to have it because that's where the sarim are in charge. They have power there. They don't have power in Eretz Israel, but they have power over there. The Ramban, I didn't put it in over here. Elsewhere, he quotes, of course, the Gemara Ketubot that says that anyone who lives in Chutz La'aretz, it's ki'ilo oved avodah zarah, right? Gemara starts out saying it's oved avodah zarah. Then it says, no, it's ki'ilo oved avodah zarah. There are many explanations for that, but the Ramban says it's very simple. Because if you live in Chutz La'aretz, that means that you're under sarim. You're under the thrall of these other spiritual entities. Whereas if you live in Eretz Yisrael, you have a direct line. There's no one else between us and God. Now he continues. Here's a very important part. You'll have to leave the land very quickly. Shem says, you'll be kicked out of the land. However, what happens after you're kicked out of the land? Heyu mitzuyanim b'mitzvot. What is mitzuyanim b'mitzvot? Anybody know?
Adorned with mitzvot.
Adorned with mitzvot. So that when you come back, they shouldn't be new to you. So I'm doing mitzvot in Brooklyn, in Golders Green, in Johannesburg, in Africa, in Antarctica, wherever. So that when I come back, it won't be new. Has anybody ever heard this before?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's only as a custom, so they don't forget their mitzvahs.
Good. So the Ramban made this famous, but we'll see. Not so simple. Mashallah, don't. What is this based on? He's just making this up? He didn't make this up. He's quoting the Sifri. So where's the Sifri? So first we'll finish looking at it in the Ramban, and then we'll get back to the Sifri itself. Mashallah, adon shaka'as al ishto v'shalcha l'beit aviyah. Amar la havei mishkat shetet tachshitim, shek shek tachzari, lo yihu alecha chadashim. A husband kicked his wife out of the house and told her, but keep your jewelry, because I want to make sure that you're used to your jewelry and your makeup so that when you come back, you'll know how to put them all on. V'kach amar Yirmiyahu. This is all based on a single pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Hatzivi lach tziyunim. This is what Yirmiyahu said to the people. Hatzivilach tziyunim. Now, Martin, what did Yirmiyahu mean when he said this? You remember?
He meant tziyunei derech, to go back to Eretz Yisrael.
Yafemod, Yirmiyahu was actually telling them, listen, go to Chutz La'aretz, go to Galut, and build houses there. Go build houses. However, make sure you leave a trail of breadcrumbs back to Eretz Israel. Right? Don't forget where you came from. Make sure you put up signs so you remember that you came from Eretz Israel and make sure you know where your way back. So Chazal took that and they said, oh, what are the tzionim? Those are the mitzvot. So that when you come back, they shouldn't be new to you. But how does the Ramban make this sound? Take a look. V'hine katuv amarash avadatem me'era v'samtem edvrei eila. You'll leave, right? You'll leave the land and you make sure to put my words on you or put these things on you. Meaning, what do you actually have to do in Chutz La'aretz? Only chovat haguf, tefillin, mezuzot, anything that requires your body. The prime aspect of the mitzvot are only for those who are doing them in Eretz Israel. Even the chovat haguf, even the ones that we all do, the mitzvot taseh, the mitzvot lo taseh, even those, prime place for them is in Eretz Israel. Yeshivat Eretz Israel shkula keneged kol mitzvot shebatorah. All right, there's a lot of things that are shkula keneged kol mitzvot shebatorah. But the land of Eretz Israel, dwelling in the land of Eretz Israel, is apparently shakul keneged kol mitzvot shebatorah. It's equal to all of the mitzvot in the Torah. Now, here is a big line. You have to look over here to find this because it's not everywhere else. How is Yaakov Avinu allowed to marry multiple sisters? Not only is it Asur Min HaTorah, and we are led to believe that the Avot kept all the mitzvot of the Torah, but it's also against Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. What's he doing? How can he marry two sisters? Rachel and Leah. So the Ramban says, "V'zoi mitzvat Yaakov Avinu leveito lechol Eshrem imo b'shat b'atam la'aretz hasirot olhei nechar asher b'tochem b'taharu." When Yaakov Avinu made his way back to Eretz Israel, when he was crossing, right, he told all of his children, "Get rid of any psalim, get rid of any idols that you have with you. Don't bring them into Eretz Israel." Why didn't they get rid of them before them? V'ashem lo levado nitknu alilot shemeta Rachel baderech betchilat v'atam la'aretz. And Hashem also took care of him. What happened to Rachel as they were entering Eretz Yisrael? She passed away. Ki bizchuta lo meta b'chutz la'aretz, u'bizchuto lo yashav ba'aretz im shtei chayot. V'hi hayta haniseit b'isur ha'achba. He married Leah first. And so Rachel was the problematic one in this sense. So she couldn't come into Eretz Yisrael with him. He couldn't be married to two sisters in Eretz Yisrael. That's the Ramban's answer to this question. There are many answers to that question. Every Rishon, every Achron has a different answer. This is the Ramban's answer. He says, in Eretz Yisrael, they kept all the mitzvot, bar none. But in Chutz Laaretz, that's where you have all the problems happening. Amram marries his aunt. Yaakov marries two sisters. And Yosef gets involved in all kinds of things as well. Only in Chutz Laaretz.
Now where she was, where she passed away in Chevro, in
Baderech
Efrat.
Baderech.
Baderech Efrata, is that a border town? It's not like your Chevid who was born right as they were going through the gates. This is not a border town. There was some overlap at the time that they were together in Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, so the footnotes in the Ramban try to deal with that question. She was in Eretz Yisrael proper. They did make it in. I assume that what the Ramban means is that maybe she started getting sick as they were entering Eretz Yisrael. I assume that he means something along those lines, that her life began to end as they entered Eretz Yisrael. I assume, but I can't really answer the question because you're right. She died b'derech Efrata, and that was definitely in Israel already. Certainly, she conceived Binyamin before that. They weren't together, right? In other words, Ramban wants to make sure that they weren't actually engaging in marital relations in Eretz Israel. Now let's focus for a second. What do we get from this Ramban? So this Ramban seems to say that Eretz Israel is very special, but not in and of itself. It's special because Hashem makes it special by dwelling in it. That's Hashem doing that. It's Hashem's land, and you don't mess around in Hashem's land. Now, what was the basis for this Sifri that we quoted before? So, again, by the way, just want to make sure. So Simon said he's heard of this before. Just by show of hands, let's see if we can use Zoom a little bit. How many people had heard this idea before, that it's only practice in Chutz La'aretz, but in Eretz Israel, it's for real, and it's only practice in Chutz La'aretz? How many people? If you can raise your hand on the thing, or if you can, actually, there's a button to raise your hand. How many people heard it? And how many of you heard it in the name of Ramban? You heard it in the name of the Ramban? Yes, most people? Okay. Right. So,
in addition to that as well, it was Ki'ilu Ein Elohim. I think he says that as well.
Where? Who?
Pinchas is nodding his head. I don't know where, but I think the Ramban says, apart from the fact that all mitzvahs and Chutz La'aretz, they're minhag, I think he also says that the Jews, b'chutz la'aretz, Ki'ilu Ein Lem Elohim.
I mean, he quotes the Gemara in Ketubot that says, "Kilu Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Kilu Ein Lo Elohak." That's the Gemara in Ketubot, Kuf Yud Aleph, I think. It's the most famous one. He's not saying that himself. That's the Gemara that says it. He's the one who explains it. Now, you might be surprised to find out that it's not just the Ramban. First of all, it's a pasuk in Devarim that the Sifri is quoting. Rashi says, "V'samtem et dvarai." Okay, this is Rashi. Af la'achar she'tiglu ayu b'tzuraim b'mitzvot, henheichu tefillin, asu mezuzot, kedei shelo yu lechem chadashim k'shetachzeru, v'cheinu omer atzivi lach tziyunim. It's like we don't even do Shnayim Mikra. Rashi said it way before the Ramban did. It's the same quote, it's the same Sifri, but it's not the Ramban, it's Rashi. The Ramban just made it famous, but Rashi said it first. And even Rashi didn't say it first. It's in the Sifri. This is a Midrash. Davar acher v'avadetem mehera. Samtem et Rai Eila. Once again, this is on Samtem et Rai Eila on this pasuk. Even though I'm going to kick you out, make sure that you're adorned with mitzvot, so that when you come back, they shouldn't be new. And the mashal melech basar v'adam, it's a king in here. It's not an adon, but a king. He kicks his wife out, and he tells her, make sure you take your makeup and your jewelry, and so it's not hard for you to put them back. And hativi lach tzionim, elu ha-mitzvot shiso ha-mitzvinim behem. You see this whole thing in the Midrash, not the Ramban that made it up. Now, I don't want us to go too far with this Ramban, okay? Because the Ramban also quotes that Rashi on the Pasuk Vasamtem et Dvar Eila in Dvarim, but then he pulls back. Ramban says, listen, Kfar katavti perusha inyan ki ha-mitzvot ha-eila chovat ha-gufim. V'dinam b'kol makom k'mo ba'aretz. Oops, sorry about that. Martin, it's not derabanan. Lo haya v'lo nivra. Ramban never said they were derabanan. Dinam shaveh b'kol makom. The halacha is the same in Eretz Israel as it is in Brooklyn, as it is in Johannesburg, as it is in London, as it is everywhere else. The halacha is the same. All the dinam are the same. Aval yesh bo b'midrash esas sodamok u'kfar amazti menu. That's our pasuk. Bnei Chzir am b'mitzvot ha'ila tefillin v'divrei Torah mezuzah kan pam shenit lermoz behakesh hazeh sheniyeh chayavim behem. Don't misread the Midrash. The Midrash isn't saying that you don't have to do them. The Midrash is saying that you do have to do them. There, you have chayav to do them in all the places. You're only patur from chovat hakarka, like truma and meiser. That's what you're patur from. Right? It's telling you that even when you leave, continue to do the mitzvot. Continue to do the mitzvot. So the Ramban is not going to say, and he doesn't say, and he says not, that there is any patur from mitzvot in chutz laaretz. He never would have said that. He says, dinam shaveh b'kol makom. The only thing he said is that there's something special about doing the mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael because we have a direct line to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And because of that, the Avot, since they were doing the mitzvot only voluntarily, so they only took care to do them in an assiduous way only in Eretz Yisrael. There was no point in doing them so meticulously in Chutz La'aretz. Now, is there anybody who would say that there is no reason to do mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz? Anybody who might say that. So we do find that idea. Not that people would say it, but that somebody might have thought it. And we find it in Tosfot in Bava Batra. Okay? This is an important Tosfot in Bava Batra. It's a good makor. It's focused on the subject of the Mekoshesh Eitzim, and who is identified in Bava Batra, according to Rabbi Kiva, as being whom? No? What's his name? The Mekoshesh Eitzim? Sofchad. Koshesh Eitzim was the person who did something with Eitzim. We don't know what he did. The explanations abound. He did one of the 39 malachos with trees. He might have cut them. He might have gathered them. He might have planted them. He might have cooked with them. We don't know. But he did something with the Eitzim. Nira l'Rashba. This is not the Rashba of Spanish fame, like the Rashba and the Ritva. This is one of the Balei Tosfot. The Rashba says, so there's an opinion that says that Slofchad, that Mekoshesh Eitzim occurred right after the Meraglim. Why is that important? Because he was doing it L'Shem Shamayim. Whatever it is that he did it L'Shem Shamayim. How could it be L'Shem Shamayim? How could it be Chalal Shabbos L'Shem Shamayim? Shayu Amrim Yisrael Kevan Shenigzar Alein Shalei Kanes La'aretz. Because the rest of the Jews, they were saying that now that we're not going to go into Eretz Israel, that's it for mitzvot. We don't have to do mitzvot. What did he do? Amad v'chilal Shabbat kedei sheyahareg v'yur achayim v'lo nasu ad sof 40 shana kedemuchach v'kray. What did he do? He got up and he was mechal Shabbos l'shem shamayim so that everybody would know that this is the punishment, that you get skila for being mechal Shabbos. And that there's no such thing as being pater from mitzvot just because you're not in Eretz Israel. Now, those of you who are in the Shabbos Smicha programmer that went through it, what's the problem with this Tosfos? What problem does he cause over here? if the Mekoshesh Eitzim was doing L'shem Shamayim, how does that make the story problematic? No, somebody familiar with Hilchos Shabbos. What do you call it when somebody... Say again, Simon, is that you? Yafemod. What do you call it when somebody does a malacha, but not for its intended purpose? You call it a malacha she'ina tzricha l'gufa. What does it mean not to do it for its intended purpose? Does it mean not for its totza'ah, the one that normally comes out, or does it mean for the totza'ah that was in the Mishkan? One way or another, it seems clear that according to Tosfot, the Mekoshesh Sheitzim was doing it for a purpose other than whatever it is that you would normally do, whatever it is that he did to the Eitzim. All right, subject for another time. But either way, this Baal Tosfos, the Rashba, assumes that at least the Jews of the time thought that once they weren't going to Eretz Israel, then that nullified their obligation to do this mitzvot. And so up came Safchad and showed them that that was not true. Very important Tosfot. This so we is see is that the basis for
Rav Shimon's Safar on this?
About Malach HaShem Tzrich. Rav Shimon says you're pater from Malach HaShem Tzrich
L'Gufa. Right, I'm saying, is this his basis for it? I can't remember what the
But the Mekoshesh got skila, so it would support Rabbi Yehuda.
Slicha, yeah, is this Rabbi Yehuda's basis for it?
No, I don't think so.
Is this brought in the Tosfos there? No.
No.
Okay. This was your connection.
No, I'm not the only one to come to ask this question, but I don't remember who originally asked it. Anyways, last Ramban that I want to look at. This is the Ramban from last week's Parsha, from Parsha's Mitzora. Specifically speaking about nigei batim, when you have tzarat on a house. So Ramban says this condition is not natural, does not occur in the world, obviously. Except when the Jews are committed to God, then the spirit of Hashem is upon them and it preserves their bodies and clothes and houses so that they have a good appearance. When Hashem is, his spirit is upon Bnei Israel, so then he preserves their appearance and their houses and their clothing. But when one of them sins, in those cases, then an ugliness appears in the skin or clothing or house in order to show that Hashem's presence has evacuated. Tzarat is a lack of Hashem's presence. This only occurs in the land of Israel, which is the inheritance of God, the Ramban says. This can only happen in Eretz Israel. This is not because it is a mitzvah that is tied to the land, but rather because this is the chosen land in which God dwells. Ramban claims, now, usually he's quoted as saying that it's specifically nigei batim that only happens in Eretz Yisrael, that tzarat could occur in Chutz Laaretz. But it's not clear from this quote. Furthermore, the Midrash says that there were no blemishes on houses until after the full conquering of land, because only then were people able to know and focus on God. So tzarat can only occur in Eretz Yisrael because it is a function of God's presence. So if it's a function of God's presence, so then it can only happen in Eretz Yisrael. I didn't bring, by the way, what we were talking about before about the specialness of Eretz Israel. The truth is I meant to look into the Kuzari. If there's anybody here who's an expert in Kuzari, I'd love to hear. I have a feeling that the Kuzari takes Simon's position, that there's something special about Eretz Israel itself, that Hashem made Eretz Israel, the whole land, different, which I don't think is what the Ramban says. But I didn't have time to look into the Kuzari to say that. Okay, that's so far Ramban. Who disagrees? So take a look at Rabbi Soloveitchik. This is Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, the Rav, former Rosh Yeshiva of YU, and one of the Gedolim in America. We don't really have to give him an introduction. He writes a striking statement. This is in one of his posthumous books called The Emergence of Ethical Man, based on his notes, based on classes that he gave. So we have a striking statement. He says, Kedusha, under a halachic aspect, is man-made. More accurately, it is a historical category. A soil is sanctified by historical deeds performed by a sacred people, never by any primordial superiority. Primordial superiority is a fancy way of saying that something inherent in the land makes it special. The halachic term kedushat ha'aretz, the sanctity of the land, denotes a consequence of a human act, either conquest or the mere presence of the people in that land. Kedusha is identical with man's association with Mother Earth. Nothing should be attributed a priori to dead matter. Objective Kedusha smacks of fetishism. Okay? So Rabbi Soloveitchik really did not like the idea that there should be anything special in the land of Eretz Israel that separates it in any way from the land on any other place on Earth or for that matter on the moon. He didn't believe that.
Even Evan Ashtia?
Let's hold off on Evan Ashtia, I told you. But no, the land of Eretz Yisrael, Ra'anana, Akko, Yafo, Tel Aviv, nothing special about it. The only thing that could possibly make it special is people going into the land, tilling the land, and then separating Trumot and Masrot from the objects in the land. That's what would cause Kedusha to inhere in the land. But when there's nobody here, this is the question for the Rabbi Sol. Here's the question. If there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, is it still special? According to the Ramban, yes. It was special before the Jews showed up. In fact, it was so special, and I didn't focus on this before. I didn't make this point, and I should have. Ramban writes here and in other places that note that the Torah says that it's not just us that will be kicked out if we do bad things in the land of Israel. It's everybody. The nations that were in Israel before us, they were kicked out because they were violating Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayot, things that apply to them because they are Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. It's true. It's true. They weren't kicked out for being Mechalel Shabbat. They weren't kicked out for eating pork. They weren't kicked out for eating Basar V'Chalav or for not giving Tzedakah. They weren't, because those don't apply to them. So it's not expected. But they were kicked out for not doing the things that did apply to them. And that is anathema to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But here's the question, though. If we are not here, is there anything special about the land of Israel? According to the Ramban, yes, it's still God's land. He still lives here more than he lives anywhere else. According to the Rav, no. Nothing special happens in the land of Israel until a Jew shows up and makes it special. Now, he didn't just write this in one place.
Rav Danny, isn't it the same thing with everything? If you don't sanctify something and make it a kli of a value, it's nothing. If you take the body of a gadol hador and he dies, his body is not holy. It's nothing. It's just a vessel.
You make it sound very simple.
But the Ramban, I don't think he's saying that the sand on the beach in Herzliya has any holiness to it. I don't think he's saying that. What does Hashem living here mean? It's more holy? I don't understand.
Yeah.
And therefore what? Holy means separated.
The air in Eretz Yisrael is different than the air in...
Different in what way?
Sacramento, California.
It has
more God in it. I don't know how to say it other than that.
Right. So we use the word Zgula, but that's only the potential to facilitate a connection between man and God. It can't be holy in itself. It doesn't mean anything. What does it mean?
The Ramban disagrees with that. I don't know what you mean by that. God has more presence here.
Yeah. I mean...
The Wi-Fi is stronger here. Yeah, go ahead, Barbara.
No, I'm just sort of thinking back to when we first made Aliyah. And, you know, I wasn't fully Shomer Shabbat then at all. And somehow in England, I could live with it. And here, I couldn't. It made me very uncomfortable. There was something about being in Israel. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the air or being amongst other Jews or something. But they felt to be a qualitative difference, you know, about living in Israel from living in Israel, in England. I don't know if that supports Ramban or anything, but just my experience, whether it's relevant.
All the Israelis that are chilonim here and go to India suddenly become super religious. It's to do with the way that you react to what's around you. I think the Wi-Fi here is stronger is really a wonderful analogy. I love that. I think it's true, but the Wi-Fi requires somebody to receive the internet. If you don't receive it.
But that's not true. But Simon, that's objectively not true. The Wi-Fi works whether you're there or not.
It doesn't have any meaning. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, maybe. It may be that it has no meaning. Maybe if we're not here to show up, if there's no audience, then who cares that there's more Kedusha? That may be true.
No, it's not who cares. It has Enzer Mashmaut.
But Eretz Yisrael also works when we are not here. But Yishubat Ha'aretz Shavtotea. So that's also
something. It doesn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
That means it doesn't work. Well, there's, you know, you're right. There could be all kinds of explanations for what that means exactly, but you're right. It definitely doesn't work as well without us here. That's true. Let's continue in the Rav, because he didn't write this only in one place. In fact, actually, this is a quote. This is from a recording. There's a book called The Rav Thinking Aloud. It's based on tapes that a man named Holzer recorded Rabbi Soloveitchik over the course of many, many years. He was one of his students. So after a long time, I guess he took out the tapes and just started transcribing them. This made a lot of people very angry. The family didn't want anything published that the Rav didn't write and, you know, edit and go over. And this was all things that the Rav said. So it made a lot of people angry. I remember Rabbi Rakefet said that he once heard somebody say, you know, it's not right. He secretly taped Rabbi Soloveitchik and then he's publishing the transcriptions. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't even know he was being taped. So Rabbi Rakefet shows a picture of the tape recorder and it's like this big and it's on the table right in front of Rabbi Soloveitchik. There's no way that there was any secret about whether he's being recorded. But either way, what I'm going to read to you, what I have in front of you right now is from, actually, it's from a Yom HaTzma'ut. And the way that Rabbi Holzer set up the context was that it was right after Shacharit on the morning of Yom HaTzma'ut, which Rabbi Soloveitchik was famous for disliking. He really did not like the ceremony that was instituted for Yom HaTzma'ut by the chief rabbinate, which YU did in full and still does to this day. He really didn't like it. He didn't like the Haftorah and he didn't like the Halal in the middle with a bracha and everything. He really didn't like it for halachic reasons. It wasn't anti-Zionistic or anything like that. He just thought it wasn't correct. And so it got him all riled up. And then the students started asking questions and presumably about an hour and a half or so of this was what took place. And all of this was recorded and transcribed. So this is what he said. He says, some of it is philosophical and some of it is a little bit sharp. He says, when there's a krisas bris, covenant reached with Avram Avinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Eretz as well as part of the bris. V'natati lecha luzarecha acharecha et eretz megurecha et kol ha'eretz k'nan l'achuzat olam v'hiti lechem lehem lelukim. Right? So Hashem makes a deal and part of the covenant is that the descendants of Avram Avinu will get Eretz Israel. The covenant participated between Avram and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Eretz Israel. That is why the Ramban says the very moment when one of the Avos or one of the Shvatim stepped over the boundary line of Eretz Israel and found himself in Chutz La'aretz, he found himself relieved of Kiyum Mitzvot HaTorah. That's what the Ramban says. So according to the Rav, the proper way to understand the Ramban is that the reason why Avram stopped doing mitzvot or was less serious about the mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz wasn't because there was any less Kedusha or that God wasn't present there, but it was simply because the deal between him and God only existed in Eretz Israel. The deal was, I do the mitzvot, I get Eretz Israel. I don't do the mitzvot, I get kicked out of Eretz Israel. That's how we understand the Ramban. Now, I think that's a very difficult, he continues, says, that's why Yaakov married two sisters and Rachel died in order to come back to Eretz Israel, because in Eretz Israel, the status of Yaakov is that of a Jew, and in Chutz La'aretz, he had no status of Kedushas Israel. I don't think that's a fair representation of what the Ramban said that we saw, not in context. However, I will acknowledge that the Ramban does write in other places that, for example, that the Ramban understands the famous Gemara in Megillah that says that the Bnei Israel reaccepted the mitzvot, or it seems to say they reaccepted the mitzvot when after Megillat Esther, Kimu v'kiblu ayudim, Kimu mashi kiblu kfar, that they reaccepted the mitzvot, that the Ramban understands that basically it was a completely new acceptance, that they had almost, that basically the covenant had been broken, and they had to reaccept the mitzvot in Persia. Why did it be broken? Because they were kicked out of Israel. And the moment they get kicked out of Israel, they no longer have to keep the mitzvot. Because the deal is that when you're in Israel, you keep the mitzvot. And if you don't keep the mitzvot, then you get kicked out of Israel. But then if we're out of Israel, then why do we have to keep the mitzvot anymore? There's no deal. That's what Ramban says. It's a very striking, very difficult statement. Not everybody explains things that way. But it could be that this is what the Rav was talking about. Because the Rav knows that Ramban. He actually quotes in a footnote in the Lonely Hand of Faith. He knows the Ramban. He knows all the Rambans. But he likes that Ramban because he quotes it in a footnote in Lonely Man of Faith. Let's continue. Says, this is correct as far as the bris between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avram. Then the Aretz played a most important role. When the Torah was given at Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, V'atayim shamo tishmu b'koli shmatem et briti v'hitam li skula mikol ha'amim, typos are mine, ki li kol ha'aretz. Remember the Ramban quoted this pasuk. How did the Ramban quote the pasuk? Ki li kol ha'aretz referred to What's the Eretz? Presumably, Eretz Israel, right? Kilikal Eretz means Eretz Israel. But what does Rabbi Salvechik say? What's Kilikal Eretz? Rashi over there says it does not belong. It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, this covenant is not limited to space and to land, meaning Eretz Israel. This covenant is obligatory and binding on every Jew, no matter where he finds himself. No matter whether in Boston or New York or Eretz Israel, whether on Har Bayis or on the moon. Because Kilikal Eretz, Kiyum Mitzvah, is applicable not only to Bnei Eretz Israel, but to any Jew, no matter where he finds himself. Hence, to say Yad this revolves around the Yishuv Eretz Israel would be wrong. However, there is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Israel. It's a separate mitzvah. He goes on and he says, because he's fielding questions, the boys are trying to rile him up. They're trying to say, but isn't there anything special about Eretz Israel? Should we move to Eretz Israel? All the students are asking, should we move to Eretz Israel? I forget what year this was. It was 1950-something. I forget exactly. He says, all I object to is you can preach the ideals of Yeshiva Eretz Israel, but one thing you should leave out, not to try to create a doubt in the minds of those who study Torah and are Bnei Yeshiva that their Yadus is inferior to the Kedushas Israel of Eretz Israelim who don't study Torah and don't think. If you study the Parshios of Avram properly, you'll find out there are two brisos. One bris is a combination of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Eretz, and the second bris is for Eretz Israel. That second Haftacha prevails, continues, but making Avram's way of life dependent upon Eretz Israel, this has been replaced by Bris Sinai. So that Haftacha doesn't matter anymore. Right? He says, what's the deal with Eretz Israel? It belongs to us. It's Dinei Mamonos. In other words, we get the benefit of it. And it will be the center of the Shekhinah at the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will redeem Knesset Israel. That's a separate thing. Now here, they asked him point blank, what do you do with the Ramban in Devarim, which says that Kiyum Mitzvahs and Chutz La'aretz is not on the same level as in Eretz Israel? All right? He starts, I knew that Ramban before you were born. Cook comes out with the Ramban as if he is the only one to which the Ramban has entrusted the text. I knew about it and I sweated out the Ramban. I sweated out the Ramban, and the Ramban never said it. This is a Sifri, a difficult Sifri, and we don't know exactly the text of the Sifri. And no matter who says it, I don't care. The three words, Kilikal Eretz, settles everything. It means Chovas HaMitzvos and Chutz La'aretz is not to be considered a prologue or introduction. They are of the same importance. Okay? So according to the Rav, doesn't matter where you live, this whole idea that the Ramban comes up with, that the mitzvos are more special in Eretz Yisrael than they are in Chutz La'aretz, the Rav is vehemently against it. Now, this is the Rav. This is what he writes. This is what he believes. Just want to bring you one more quote from him, though. This is quoted from Rabbi Arkevitz's book. So this is something the Rav said himself. It's just very interesting to see how he feels. He says, I'll never forget the evening in 1935 when I visited Rabbi Zev Gold in Ramat Gan. He took me out to the orange groves near his house. It was a beautiful night. The sky was a perfect blue and there were endless stars. The bright moon of Eretz Israel shone all over with an enchanted beauty. From afar, we could see the lights of the new all-Jewish city of Tel Aviv glistening in the dark. The lights were telling us the thrilling and intoxicating news of the rebuilding of the Holy Land. Overwhelmed with emotion, Rabbi Gold gazed toward the horizon, then turned to me and said, whoever does not feel the presence of God in Eretz Israel on this beautiful night while looking at this magnificent moon and these beckoning stars, breathing the clear and pure air filled with the fragrance of blossoming growth, and above all, when looking at all the glistening lights of the city that was built entirely by Jews, is simply blind. Rabbi Gold continued, Rabbi Yehuda Alevi was right when he said that the prophecy flows unhindered in Eretz Israel and we need only a proper vessel to receive its message. As we stood there, Rabbi Gold picked up a small pebble and kissed it to fulfill Rabbi Abba's dictum in the Talmud that he would kiss the rocks of Akko. That night, I thought to myself how insignificant I was compared to the special Jew who was able to experience the glory of God through the grandeur of the landscape of the land of Israel. After everything that he said, how jarring is this quote? He wishes he could feel it. By the way, this was the one and only time that Rabbi Salvechik was in Eretz Israel in 1935. He was there for a couple of weeks, and that was it. Never came back. Not because he was against. He writes about that in other places. It was the only time he was there. So this is what I wanted to show you about the Rav.
He didn't kiss the ground when he got off the airplane?
I don't know. Now, I'll be honest. Look, I am definitely a...
He didn't take an airplane in 1935.
That's true, too. I'm definitely, I don't want to say, I don't want to trivialize it by saying I'm a fan. I am an aficionado or a lover of the Rav's Torah and his thought, as many people are, as many people in the Yeshiva University world are. But I am pretty sure that the majority, if not 80%, let's say, of the Orthodox Torah-thinking Jews in the Yeshiva University community do not feel the way that the Rav feels about Eretz Yisrael. First I'll quote Rav Kook, and then I'll quote somebody else who I think can safely represent the Jews of YU. First I'll quote Rav Kook. Hold on, Simon. Rav Kook says as follows, Adimyon shel Eretz Yisrael hu tzalulu barur. The imagination in Eretz Yisrael is clear. Nakivat ha'or musugal hofa'at ha'emet elokit, albashat ha'chefetz ha'murama, manizgav shel ha'magama ha'adiyalit asher b'elyonot ha'kodesh, muchana ha'zbarat nevu'a v'oratea, lavakat ruach ha'kodesh v'zohar rav. I'm not an expert in the Rav Kook. I'm exactly the opposite. I don't understand half of what he says. But what he's saying over here is that the imagination is given clarity in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it is able to understand and comprehend nevu'a. It's dirty in Chutz La'aretz. It's covered in darkness, mixed up with darkness. You can't go up to heights. It cannot be the basis for divine light that comes out of all the worlds. He wants to say that based on this, not only is the imagination stunted in Chutz La'aretz, but the seichel and the intelligence are stunted as well. The air in the land of Israel makes people wiser. Now, the Rav would respond to this. He says, I can learn Torah better than many people in Eretz Israel, which is what he said. I didn't bring it in the quote, but that's what he said. He says he's not impressed with that. Whatever Avir Eretz Yisrael Machkim means, it doesn't mean that inherently Eretz Yisrael is better suited for Torah. But that's certainly what the Rav Kook says. Now take a look at this quote from Rabbi Lichtenstein before I take a question. So Rav Aaron, he wrote the following. He says, the most striking example of the halachic significance of Eretz Yisrael is the position of the Ramban, that the observance of any mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael is qualitatively different than that outside of Eretz Yisrael. He holds the radical opinion that mitzvah observance in the diaspora is only preparation coming to Eretz Yisrael, where mitzvot acquire their full significance. I find this position astounding and alarming, but one can adopt it in a moderate vein. Rav Huttner would daven on the airplane on his way to Eretz Yisrael. He would put on his tefillin again upon arrival. He said, before I put on Chutz La'aretz tefillin, and I'm putting on Eretz Yisrael tefillin. Beforehand, I put on that, like it's like Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi. Before I put on Chutz La'aretz tefillin, now I'm putting on Eretz Yisrael. Ramban says that this applies to the whole range of the religious experience. Okay, so you have none other than the Rav's son-in-law, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, spiritual successor of the Rav. And he himself, he's quoting Rav Huttner, who is also his Rebbe. He himself says he feels this way, right? That the Eretz Yisrael has some kind of significance, halachic significance, for every mitzvah in total. Okay, Simon, what did you want to say?
As somebody who's very familiar with the Rav and his teachings, would you say that he's a very non-emotional personality, and therefore anything which is affiliated to expressing an emotion and mixing emotion and halacha is to him a fetish and is to him just not something, because he can't explain it, so he doesn't want to bring it into the equation, as opposed to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who comes from a similar background, seems to be more happy in expressing how an emotion can get involved in a halacha.
I don't think so. I don't think the Rav lacked emotion. His father might have, which he writes. But the Rav was very human. And most of his works are poetic, as they are scientific. You know, even the most supposedly dry halachic man, right, where he's describing somebody who is not emotional, somebody who is very cold and calculating. Even his descriptions are majestic and poetic. And so I don't think he lacked emotion. And he had a very rich inner life. He writes about it in many, many places. Felt very close to God. True that his connection to God was through the Torah and through Talmud Torah, obviously, and not through Eretz Yisrael, because he didn't even spend time there. That's true. But it's not because he lacked that bone in his body. It's just that he was against the thinking. I'll tell you what it was. It was very striking that you said before that it's obvious that man cannot create Kedusha. I don't think it's obvious, but I don't think it's unprecedented. I didn't put it on the sources, but the Meshech Chachma makes a very similar comment. Meshech Chachma says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, he smashed the Luchot, right? And this is a very striking thing for him to do. These are the Luchot that were made by God. How could he do such a thing? You know, he took God's Luchot and he smashed them on the ground. They were chiseled by God and they were inscribed by God. How could he do such a thing? So Meshech Chachma says, anyways, why don't you just, put them on the side. Like, put them on the side, say, when you guys start behaving again, you can have them. Why do you smash them? And so the Meshech Chachma says, essentially, that he wanted to teach them a lesson. He didn't want them to go from worshiping the golden calf to worshiping the tablets. He wanted to teach them that inherently, there is nothing special about these tablets. And you know why? Because they were made by God. Because Kedusha in this world cannot come from anything that God does, it only comes from what man does. Man creates Kedusha, that's what he says. Man creates Kedusha in a Sefer Torah. Man creates Kedusha in a Shekel. Man creates Kedusha in the land. That's the Meshech Chachma's whole point over there. So the Rav was definitely tapping into that idea. But I think it's far from obvious to say that there's nothing special about the tablets. It's a fancy statement. It's an incredible statement. You could say the same thing about Har Sinai. Har Sinai, the Kedusha dissipated right after Kadosh Baruch Hu lifted his presence. But I think it's far from obvious. I don't think it's what most people would have expected. So that's what I wanted to say about that. Just continuing, just to challenge the Rav a little bit more. If there were a ton of Rishonim and Achronim that buttressed his point and said, there's nothing special about Eretz Yisrael, or they just kept mum about it, then fine, maybe the Ramban is the only one. But it's not the case. I could have brought a ton of things, but I just brought a couple. The Shut Maharit that everybody quotes. Maharit was of Yosef ben Moshe Trani, the son of the Mabit. So he lived in Sfat. The Mabit was a contemporary of Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch. And here he's dealing with a halachic question. The question over here is a man who swore that he would move his whole family to Eretz Yisrael if his wife had a boy. And then whatever happened, she wasn't well, and then she didn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael, and he wanted to know, does he have to nullify his neder? And that's basically what he's dealing with over here. And I don't want to go into all the ins and outs of the shaila, but on the way, he says as follows. He says, "Umistama daf bizman azeha ish kofet aisha," that a man can force his wife to go to Eretz Yisrael, and a wife can do the same to the man. That's the Mishnayot in Ketubot. Mishum Kedushat Eretz Yisrael u'mitzvat yishivata. You can do that because the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and the mitzvah of living there. And he says, afilu bizman hazeh b'chorbana. This is in the 16th century. Even nowadays when there's no Beit HaMikdash, k'mosh kasav Ramban, b'perish ha-mitzvot, mikod v'yireshtem otah v'yishavtem ba. The pasuk in the Torah that, according to the Ramban, is the source for the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. But look what he says. Uvda disavri ad yishivas Eretz Yisrael shkula keneged kol mitzvos. And he says as follows. Im yishum kiyum ha-mitzvot ha-tliyot ba, isha ma'ivirita b'mitzvot elu. If the reason that Eretz Yisrael is more special is simply because there are more mitzvot to do there, because when you get to Eretz Yisrael, you can do trumot and masrot, like the Rav said, right? Then why is a wife able to force a husband to do so? After all, the wife, she doesn't have those same chiyuvim as the man because she can't own the land. Halachically, it all belongs to him. He's the one who's obligated. She doesn't have the same obligations as him. So he makes this halachic argument. He says, if it's only about the mitzvot, if that's what makes Eretz Yisrael special, then there should be a difference between a man and a woman. The man should be able to force her because he wants to go do those mitzvot, but the woman shouldn't be able to force him because she doesn't have any more share in that than she does in Pru or Vu or anything like that. The two, Eved Mashayach b'mitzvot, and also an Eved also is able to do this, but what does the Eved have to do with anything? Eved Shabarach Mechutz Naaretz La'aretz Damrin Lezvinei Acha V'zil Mishum Yishivit Eretz Yisrael. He's allowed to sell, you're not allowed to sell him back to Chutz La'aretz. But what place does an Eved have in Eretz Yisrael? He doesn't have a place in the mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael. Rather, what must it be? It must be that there's something special about Eretz Yisrael itself. That's one source. Here's another. Shut Ataret Paz is written by Pinchas Zvichi. He was born in 1860, and this is from the introduction in the third Chelek of Chelek Aleph of Evan Ezer. This is like, we should have read this in Yom Ha'atzmaut. He has a whole long section about the specialness of Eretz Israel. But in the middle over there, he says, Hu yagish ba'aretz et avirat ha'kdusha. He's talking, I think, about the Arizal. He says he felt the specialness of the land of Eretz Yisrael and its air. And he felt this every single place he went. Here's a striking statement, by the way. He felt it was like an Aron Kodesh for everybody who lived there. You guys have heard this before? Anybody who walks 4 amot in Eretz Yisrael, you get a mitzvah? Sounds like a Baba Maisa, right?
No, but you could use Dalet Amot Beretz Yisrael, even in Chutz La'aretz, as a guarantee for a kinyan. There is a halacha like that somewhere.
I didn't follow.
You could do kinyan agav Dalet Amot Sheyeshli Beretz Yisrael, even in Chutz La'aretz.
Oh, okay. But that's not what he's referring to here. Here he's referring to the idea that if you walk 4 amot in Eretz Yisrael, you get a zchut gedola. I was trying to say, this sounds like, it sounds like the kind of thing that we tell kids, but it's not true. Yeah, that's in the Gemara and Ksuvos. Same Gemara we quoted before. Same Gemara, it says, everybody who walks 4 amot in Eretz Yisrael, you get a mitzvah. And a person has to treat the land special because of this. You have to realize that there's something special going on. This is striking. This is Rav Kukian. Yeah, he says, I want to be melamed sanigoria al rechokim mitorah mitzvot ani mitzvot be'eretz Yisrael. Those who are far from mitzvot, who live in Israel, kilamod shashmatam gedola mishahem chotim bepaltin shomach. It's very bad that they're sinning in Eretz Yisrael. So he says, there's this balance going on for people who aren't keeping mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael. On the one hand, it's a spit in the face of God and the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, at least they're here, and they're imbibing Kedusha in every breath. At least he's here. He comes once a year to shul on Yom Kippur. At least he came for Yom Kippur. He didn't miss Yom Kippur. Okay, there's a lot more that I could have quoted over here, but I just want to end getting back to Simon's point about the Eved Shtia, right? Yerushalayim. The Ramban himself writes in Bereishit. He says, from antiquity, the nations knew that this place is the choicest site, the center of the inhabited world, Yerushalayim. Perhaps they knew from some tradition that its excellence is because it directly faces the heavenly temple where the Shekhinah resides, right? So that the center, right, the Har HaBayit, the Eved Shtia, it corresponds to the Beit HaMikdash Shel Mala, right, where the Shekhinah resides. But none other than the Rav writes something very similar. The Rav is trying to answer the question of why is it that when, he's actually answering the question of why Hashem chose Avraham Avinu. And his answer to that question actually is very fascinating. His answer is Avraham chose Hashem. That by traveling to Eretz Israel, which Avraham was already doing before Hashem called to him, it showed that Avraham was the kind of person that is searching for Kedusha. Here is a central idea in Judaism: Kedusha attracts. This was the greatest discovery made by Avram. The generation of the flood thought that beauty is fascinating and that it's man's duty to respond quickly to the aesthetic challenge. The generation of the dispersion, that's the Dora Falaga, thought that power is the idea that overwhelms man. Avram proclaimed to the world that Kedusha is the great attractive force. But look over here. Avram entered Canaan from the north, the most fertile part of the country. He should have stopped there. He was a shepherd. He needed the land. Why didn't he settle in the north, in the Golan? Rashi raised the question and answered that Avram was going towards Jerusalem, which is in the southern belt of Canaan. The holiness of Jerusalem pulled him instinctively towards the south. Avram was instinctively attracted by the Kedusha the way the bee is attracted by the nectar of the flower. Oh, wait a second here. What Kedusha? The Rav doesn't believe in primordial Kedusha. Where does it come from? What's he talking about? So apparently even the Rav acknowledged that there was something about the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. It's interesting that the Rambam, whereas he discusses the Kedusha Rishona, Kedusha Shnia, when Bnei Yisrael were exiled the first time, exiled the second time, did the land retain its Kedusha, did it not? The Rambam writes that Har HaBayit, that Yerushalayim, its Kedusha never went anywhere and could never go anywhere because the Shekhinah resides there. So even there, it could be that the Rav acknowledges that there is something special about Jerusalem because the Shekhinah resides there. I don't know how it squares with the rest of what he writes. This is a Chatam Sofer. He says a lot of the points that we've been making. He also says that Yerushalayim is more special than anywhere else in Eretz Israel. And halachically, he ascribes significance and says that if you're going to give tzedakah to people in Eretz Israel, you should give to people in Yerushalayim because they're living on the highest level. He writes that halachically, that's the best place to give your tzedakah to Yerushalayim. All right, so just to recap what we saw, we were looking at the psukim in the Torah and the way that they describe the land. It almost gives the land sentience, like the land is alive, and that it hates sin and it hates Gila Arayot and it hates Avodah Zarah and it's going to spit you out. The Ramban, I think, tempers that and changes the focus and says the land itself is not special, but rather HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose the land to be his resting place and thereby makes it special through his presence. You know, the same way that a king who walks into a room makes that room special. You have to act differently when the king is in the room. And Martin, getting back to your point, Einei Hashem Elokecha bo mereshit hashana ad acharit shana. I think that's what the Ramban would understand that pasuk. What makes the land special is not that the land is special, but it's that God's eyes are on it all year long. That's what makes it special. Like the king being in the room. That has impact everywhere. The Ramban, though, acknowledges, though, that doesn't mean that there's any p'tur for mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz. There is none. Mitzvot exist in Chutz La'aretz the same way they exist in Eretz Yisrael. He'll have a challenge to read the Sifri. Do you read it literally or not? The Rav did not like these ideas. He didn't like the Ramban's idea. He didn't like the Kuzari's ideas. He felt that attributing Kedusha to inanimate objects, including the land of Israel, is inappropriate. And the only way that an object can acquire halachic Kedusha is if man imbues it by doing shumot, by doing maasrot, by writing a Sefer Torah, by tying tzitzit. Those are the ways that objects acquire Kedusha. And he really didn't like what he considered fetishization of Eretz Israel. But as I said, it seems that the generations afterwards and probably before did not feel the same way that the Rav did. Rav Kook definitely attributed mystical significance to the land of Eretz Israel. Rav Aaron also seems to take that position. At least he ascribes it to Rav Huttner. And I think he's sympathetic to that view. And as we saw, you find in many of the Achronim that they said that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael does not adhere only in the mitzvot that you do in Eretz Yisrael, but it adheres in the land itself. It has special powers, whether they're inherent or whether they're given to it through God's presence. There is something special about this land that we all chose to live in. I want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. If anybody has any comments on anything I've said, I'm happy to respond or listen.
What do you think the Rav would say about the fact that the mitzvot are kliyot ba'aretz at all? Why would that Wouldn't that imply, Trumot HaMasot in Chutz La'aretz don't have any meaning, certainly not relative to what they do in Eretz Israel?
It's a condition, similar to saying, Tetvav Tishrei is the only day. Well, it's not the only day. Tetvav Tishrei, you have to sit in a sukkah. Does that mean that Tetvav Tishrei is special? The Rav would probably say, no, it's not special. It's just that that's the day that it happens. So Eretz Yisrael, is it special? No, but this is where you do these mitzvot. It's the only place where it's appropriate to do these mitzvot.
Just we interchange it between the word special, kedusha, segula, and I think it would be great to be able to define what they are. Wi-Fi.
Define it, but I think it's kind of self-explanatory. I get what you're saying, that I don't know what it looks like, and I don't know what it feels like for it to be kadosh or for it to be special. I get that. But on the other hand, I think the words are adequate for our purposes. We know what the word special and not special means. If I say, if you take an object that has sentimental value to you, right, and you say, this is special, it really means a lot more to me than other objects. So it's similar to that.
It's nothing without your input into it.
Yeah, maybe sentimental object wasn't the best example.
But Shabbat. I mean, Shabbat doesn't have intrinsic kedusha.
I guess that's Shabbat, part of the debate, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shabbat is not kept. It's not anything.
But intrinsically, Shabbat, if you keep Shabbat on Friday, you've done nothing. I think that's sort of using that as a parallel to taking the time and transferring it to place, saying if you keep the mitzvot in South Africa relative to keeping them in Israel, turns out that it's a little less dramatic, because keeping Shabbat on Thursday means nothing, but keeping the mitzvot in South Africa means something. But the intrinsic kedusha of time, i.e. Shabbat, exists. Therefore, why can't we say the intrinsic kedusha of place exists as well?
Because place is physical and time isn't. And by the way, if you get lost and you don't know what time Shabbos is, you count seven and keep Shabbos, even if it's Thursday, and then that's the best Shabbos of your life.
Simon, if I take a lulav and etrog, right? And actually, maybe that's not the best example. I'm trying to think of a better example that has to do with
Any example that we find is going to be limited by the intention, the kavana, the way that we use that physical thing, or even spiritual thing like Shabbat, how we use it to connect ourselves to Hashem.
That's the Rav's argument. The Rav's argument is that these are all just symbolic. Now, the most you can say is that it's symbolic, but the Ramban thinks that there's something more, that everything gets turbocharged in Eretz Yisrael. Here it is. You do a mitzvah, you put on your tefillin in Eretz Yisrael. We believe that mitzvot have impact on the world. Yes, that's what we tend to believe. It's not just doing the mitzvot. You do a mitzvah, it has impact on the world. So the Ramban would say that they have more impact in Eretz Yisrael than they do in Chutz La'aretz. And the Rav disagrees. He doesn't think that there's any more impact in Eretz Yisrael than there is in Chutz La'aretz.
It's all a result of the decisions and actions of Hashem, that the Eretz Israel has these qualities.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. I agree with Pinchas. A nice analogy would be if I received my grandfather's tefillin when I was bar mitzvah. And to me, those tefillin had more kedusha than much nicer tefillin than somebody offered me from a shop. So Eretz Yisrael, out of all the countries in the world, Hashem decided to put the tefillin on, and his tefillin in Eretz Yisrael. If you have a talis that was owned by a great-grandfather, and a chosum wears it under the chuppah, so that talis has no kedusha for the Rav being Mesada Kedushin. It means nothing to him.
Good, so you're agreeing with the Ramban there. And by the way, just to get back to all the way to the beginning, Simon, when I asked you, are you special because you're a Kohen? So I would argue you're not. You're not special in the sense that there's anything different about you than it is for me. It's just that God decided that Kohanim have special mitzvot and special responsibilities, and you happen to be a Kohen. It's not because you're genetically superior to anybody else, or that even that you have a potential to be more or less than anybody else. It's simply that you are part of a family that God decided are going to be the priests in the temple. And God decided that.
But that inherently makes him special and different.
Right, exactly.
It might give him the ability to eat truma. And it gives him the ability to do Berachat Kohanim, and I can't. But it doesn't change his inner worth in any way.
It's not a question.
And it doesn't change what happens when he picks up a lulav and etrog. His picking up a lulav and etrog is no different than mine. It's the same.
Sure.
Rav, it's almost like the Hashem chose the Kohanim to be a vessel through which they could introduce Kedusha into the world.
Beautiful.
It's the same with Eretz Israel.
Yeah. Beautiful. 100%.
So that inherently makes it special.
It makes it okay. So yeah. So I guess there's two kinds of special. There's special which is inherent, which I don't think is the case. And then there's special because it's been assigned value.
That makes it inherently special.
No, it's not inherent. It's assigned.
Would you say that David HaMelech had the speciality of Malchus in him? That Hashem gave him the power, the neshama of Malchus?
I don't know.
Would you say that Hashem gave you the neshama of leadership?
I have no idea.
I guess those are
genetic traits. I don't know. I don't know what those things mean.
Right, this is where I was touching on the point that the Rav's appreciation of the emotional slushy stuff is a bit like, I don't know how to explain that, so I'm not going to agree with it.
No, I think he doesn't believe in that. He thinks that, at least in this sense, there's halakha, and it's all he's interested in. I think we're going to cut it here, because I just noticed what time it is, and I don't actually know if we're impeding on anybody else, but we're going to stop here, and I want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. Anybody can message me privately if you want to continue the discussion.
Shabbat shalom.